4-star year.
Yeah, I mean, we got, yeah, I have quite a few 4-star movies. I think maybe more than I usually do. So let's just get into it then. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Cinephile New Wave. I have to call it that because Jim and Alex aren't here. These are the terms that we've set. So it's
you are contractually obligated to call it the
Duran and Nick show. It's Cinephile New Wave officially. So.
My favorite overly long title for a podcast.
All right, man. Well, welcome back, everybody.
Some people
I think
it was too pretentious. I would say it's the right amount of pretentious.
Thank you.
We're back after the Barbenheimer special. It's been
6 months.
Good to be back. It's good to talk about movies again, because last year was a little weird for movies. It was kind of all over the place, if I'm being completely honest.
Yeah, we kind of had like a major strike in the middle of the whole thing.
Yeah. Among other things. All the weird shit that came out this summer that like was supposed to do well and just didn't.
Yeah, I remember like I really like to, I don't know, read an analysis about superhero movies released last year, because of all of those major superhero movies, I think like only like two of them really did well.
Yeah.
Guardians and the new like Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Which I like, I don't know if that like means anything specifically, but I feel like it's definitely like a shift in the direction of blockbusters going forward.
For sure. I mean, Marvel already said like they're trying to restructure after I think it was the Marvels like failed miserably.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. That and like the Ant-Man one like didn't do well either, right?
Oh no. I mean, the only one of theirs that did well was Guardians, and that was still only like 900 million, I think. It didn't break the $1 billion mark.
Wow, chump change if you ask me.
Hey, at least it wasn't doing Shazam 2 numbers. As the producers of Madam Web said, or no, it wasn't the producers, it was some like analysts. They were like hoping for Shazam 2 numbers at this point.
Oh my god.
Yeah. I love how like it, and the bar just like kept getting lower. Like I think Shazam 2 was like the bottom, but like The Flash was also like a fucking horrible return on investment. Even though it was like, it was kind of like a glorious mess. Like for all the problems that movie had, it was very watchable at the very least. Just because it was like,
one of the only people I know that have said that movie is watchable. So that's an interesting take.
If you have a group of six friends together and you're like not taking anything seriously, I think you can have a good time. Because I think we were like the only six people in that theater. And none of us cared.
some of our group, it did get like some nostalgia value too, I guess. I wasn't there. I was just like making the soy jack face at the Nicolas Cage shitty CGI.
Of course.
Which is weird because he did go and film scenes, he said, so. But anyway, The Flash is... The Flash
is Nick's number one movie of last year.
Absolutely.
Maybe one of the bigger stinkers of last year. Certainly not
Quantumania. You know what? Let's just get into the stinkers. I got 2 1-star movies. I didn't give anything half a star last year. But one of them was Ant-Man. I walked out of there feeling like a fan of the original trilogy walking out of Phantom Menace. I was sickened. I was betrayed, disgusted. I just don't even want to like talk about that movie very much, just because there's nothing to talk about.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, is there anything to talk about?
Kang wasn't even a good villain, and like that was the one talking point that people thought they had, but like he wasn't. He was just like, I'm bad because I'm evil. I'm like, great, this is some fantastic motivation.
I saw like the first Ant-Man movie when it came out, and like none of the other ones. And like the only thing memorable about that movie to me was that like Lucretia Martel was supposed to direct that at some point, but dropped out because she couldn't do the action scenes.
I thought Edgar Wright was supposed to direct the original Ant-Man.
I might be thinking about a different Marvel movie then. So yeah, you're probably right.
You know what? It was probably a Black Widow. I think I remember that
Oh,
story being
really?
about Black Widow. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty funny.
The other stinky poo-poo movie I saw that I'm never going to forgive anybody who made was Exorcist Believer. That was one of the worst things I've ever had to lay my eyes on. I genuinely just wanted that experience to end.
Yeah, that looks really bad.
Oh man. Oh man.
It
None.
was bad. I didn't like hate myself for watching it. I went with a friend and I was like, "Yeah, this is fine." Like I wouldn't say anyone should look at this and be like, "Here are lessons in how to make movies." But I wasn't wanting to like tear my eyeballs out or get like a refund on the money that I didn't pay because I just went with a stubs ticket anyways. So
If anybody's wondering why Rhett sounds like that, he's in a car right now.
Hello, yes, I didn't get out of work as early as I thought I would today.
Also, I'm Nick, joined by Duran and Rhett.
Hi, I'm Duran.
Hi, I'm Nick.
Yeah, big year for 4-star movies, like you said, though. I gave both Barbie and Oppenheimer 4 stars.
That's good. That's what I like to hear.
Yeah, it was an equal fight, but at the end of the day, Venture Brothers came out on top. But more about that later.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a
Matt,
couple of stinkers this year, that's for sure.
yeah,
Yeah.
what'd you have? I mean, I know the big one.
You know my least favorite film. This is, I'm not exaggerating when I say this is legitimately one of the worst movies I've ever seen in my entire life. Like I struggled to come up with a film I've seen in the last couple years that was as miserable as seeing this film.
Oh man.
And this film was Saltburn, directed by the auteur Emerald Fennell.
Her
I
dad's
think
a
this.
jeweler.
Yes, her dad is a jeweler, apparently. Yeah, she
Just a
was at my
jeweler.
school. She presented this film at my school, and she like kind of like glossed over the fact that like her dad is like this like multi-millionaire like jeweler, which was pretty funny. But basically, this movie is like an Eat the Rich movie for rich people. It's kind of like, I don't know. Have you guys seen Pasolini's Teorema?
I have not.
It's
No.
pretty good. It's basically like that movie, but like with no themes.
How far in did you get where you like, I really would rather just turn this off or leave the theater? Like
Probably like
at what minute mark?
probably around like half an hour or so.
Half an hour. It might have been 20 minutes for The Exorcist.
I fortunately did not see The Exorcist, and I don't think I will based off of your recommendation.
No, absolutely not. I thought Saltburn was like really middle of the road. I'm probably never going to think about this again, but
Yeah,
I don't
I can
know.
definitely
It
agree.
looked pretty at points, I guess.
I'd agree
It
with that.
really just felt like sort of a vapid kind of teen drama with a little bit of Eat the Rich context sort of added onto it. And I think in that regard, I could see how some people like appreciated that. But yeah, overall, I'm just kind of like, eh, it's all right. And I certainly agree. It feels like somewhat pornographic in the like, oh, the Eat the Rich people just want to like kind of become rich themselves, not like they're wanting systemic change so that everyone can live more equitably.
Yeah, and like the major like twist for the movie, like it kind of like undermines any of the themes that it was trying to set up in the first place. So
Yeah.
like by
It's
like half.
hard to like represent your character as like a poor person when like the twist is that they're not. Like what the fuck do,
Exactly.
what does that even mean? What does
Exactly.
that
Yeah.
mean?
So like halfway through the movie, I'm just like, what is the point of the rest of this film? And I guess it's just to
Spoilers for
like,
Saltburn,
yeah,
I
spoilers
guess.
for Saltburn. Halfway through
Best
this,
I
I'm
could
just like, what's the point of this movie in the first place, like at all?
the best I could come up with is maybe like a commentary on how like oddly radicalized yet impotent like some of the like a lot of the people who seem to be part of the Eat the Rich camp are that like they're not actually from the groups they're kind of claiming to represent. But like that's not part of the film. I'm having to do a lot of the like work in there in order to
Yeah.
try and like turn that into a positive reading, and it's just not there.
Yeah.
What was all right. Is that all you want to mention for worse?
That's only like that's like the most notable one for me. There's some other ones that we'll get to later that you guys like, but
aside from what's already been mentioned, I think there were a lot of films I was very meh on. So I think the most like, especially because I avoided some of the like blockbuster stinkies, I was just like, I'm not gonna deal with Quantumania, or you know, I don't particularly care about how bad or not The Flash was. So I guess just The Meg 2, it's, again, just kind of very vapid. Like, I guess this is fun for some people. Like, that and Cocaine Bear kind of both being the, like, just very edible for general audiences, like, so bad it's good, but, like, just kind of being like, oh, this is stupid, not kind of putting any effort into being exceptionally stupid or like making the audience consider like why, air quotes, so bad it's good content is like enjoyable or kind of requires any sort of unique appeal, and is just kind of like, I can make something that's
you're not trying hard enough.
Yeah. It's like you're not trying, but you're still expecting to make $1 billion off of it, when like not trying shouldn't be expecting to make any money off of it.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I don't really want to speak on Cocaine Bear just because I saw it at like, I think I skipped through it.
Zoomer method of watching cinema.
basically, I don't know.
I mean, there are a lot of movies we tend to watch like that just to like kind of see what's going on. I sat
I don't
in a
theater. I don't feel like that's a movie that I particularly want to watch the whole way through.
You shouldn't. It really. I was just like, I'm getting nothing off of this. I've seen way worse stuff, or way worse to the point of being good stuff, and I just felt like my brain was literally off, and that's not where you want to be in a so bad it's good movie. You want to be in like a hyper stimulated, oh my God, this is atrocious, this is hilarious kind of state.
Yeah. All right. We've given enough airtime to Cocaine Bear. any big like disappointments or like, oh shit, this was actually like kind of good, movies.
Oh man, there were a lot of disappointments for me this year. I think the main ones were probably the new Mission Impossible movie.
God, yeah.
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 I don't know. Like, coming off of Fallout, this one just felt like such like a relative dud.
I have no idea who the villain in that movie was. I think it was like a Russian submarine, but also like AI or something.
No,
the villain was AI. The villain was AI, and then the one like wannabe Mechanicus who's like, I am the vessel for the AI, but also I'm your greatest enemy, so haha.
Played by some guy.
Yeah. And like, I guess he has some connection. One of the problems with the new Mission Impossibles is that they keep on trying to tie it deeper into Ethan Hunt's past, assuming that like we care, and it's like, rather than kind of trying to make a more immediately sort of compelling villain. I also thought the cinematography in that one was just like so many just weird Dutch angles and just like asinine.
It's like they're trying a bit too hard now.
The whole scene when they're just like in that club talking about like what the AI is, I just like wanted to shoot myself. I was like, it's just going between Dutch angle close up after Dutch angle close up with no kind of effort being paid to like why this could look good at all.
And for all the hype that the train jump got, I think it honestly didn't look that great, because I think they covered it up with CGI, like at least some of it. Some of that did not look good.
Yeah.
I really liked the chase through Rome with like the different cars. That was fun. There were some moments there where it's like, okay, this is cool, but also you're dropping this the same summer that John Wick 4 has come out, and like it just doesn't compare.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think Tom got too much of an ego boost off of the box office numbers of Maverick.
Perhaps. I think one of the reasons you mentioned earlier that keeps trying to like tie into Ethan Hunt's past is because like this is supposed to be like the grand finale of the Mission Impossible series.
Which it's not anymore, because I think they renamed it, like it's no longer part one of something. And I think they said that. There I might be like another movie thing, afterwards.
Right? Oh, okay. Yeah. I think they probably don't want to put all their eggs in this one basket that didn't do particularly well in the box office.
They probably have, to be honest.
I think there's some other disappointments. Ferrari was the other big one for me.
Yeah, I didn't even. I wanted to, and then I was like, I don't really care enough.
I'm a really big fan of like late Michael Mann stuff, but I don't know. Like this didn't really do that much for me. I don't think it's a bad film by any means, and like because it's a Michael Mann film, it's shot really fucking well and has great performances. But overall, I don't know. I didn't really care for the character that much. I don't think the film like really made you care about him. So it's kind of disappointing, but I don't know. I mean, because it is a Michael Mann film, maybe in 10 years I'll come around to it and consider it like the greatest film of all time, but we'll see.
That's kind of how I felt about The Boy and the Heron. Like I'm a huge fan of Miyazaki and I expected to really like it. It was getting a lot of hype. And then I was like, I could see like why people could be really into this. I think that kind of tends to be the Studio Ghibli Miyazaki kind of thing, where they have their baseline style, which is interesting. Like with The Boy and the Heron, like obviously the animation quality was really good. It always is. I just didn't quite connect to it, and that's okay. It doesn't mean it's a bad movie, but for me, that was a little bit of a disappointing experience.
I don't know. I didn't see Boy and the Heron.
I didn't either, I know. To be honest.
That's also kind of why I wanted to talk about it here, because I knew I'm the only one here who's seen it, and it wasn't going to be in my top 10. So I was just going to address that right there.
Fair enough.
All right. Special shout-outs. For me, I got Dungeons & Dragons. You were a good movie. You did not deserve to bomb as horribly as you did.
I was really surprised that bombed, because like it was just like a fun time.
Yeah, I mean that was it felt like a peak Marvel movie, you know?
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, I think my Letterboxd review for that one was honestly like, if you claim to care about blockbuster cinema and you like didn't go see this, then you don't really care. Like you're just kind of in whatever flop is being fed to you without, you know, with almost this like brand loyalty blindness towards it.
Yeah.
It, like, I was just surprised by how much effort was put into that. It might make it into my top 10. I might have to like stop and figure out what the actual fuck my top 10 is, but like that was another 4 out of 5 for me. So like in a year of a lot of 4 out of 5s, that can make it pretty far. I would say a special shout out to, since I mentioned it in last year's roundup, and like it kind of toes the line between 2022 movie and 2023 movie, but Skinamarink, still one of the best movies to have come out in the past year/2 years. And I saw it in 2023, so kind of counts, but I won't put it in my top 10. Go watch Skinamarink. It is a very good example of low budget horror and like what can be done with the medium.
Yeah, I need to watch that. I've been recommended that like endlessly, but just haven't gotten around to it.
I can't wait for you to call it vapid and meaningless.
I also got Nimona. Shout out Nimona. Disney was like, we're gonna dump your ass, and now it's being nominated and considered one of the best animated movies of the year. While they had a fucking awful year at the box office. And then it's my honorable mention. It's number 11 of my top 10, The Holdovers. It like just barely doesn't make my list, but you know, what can even be said about The Holdovers anymore that hasn't been said? It's just really good. Yeah, basically. You know, Paul Giamatti, man. Paul Giamatti and Alexander Payne. That's a winning combo. But in a movie basically pulled from the 70s, I'm repeating points you've already heard about this movie.
Another point you've already heard about this movie, Dominic Sessa, the kind of like a breakout performance in this film. So good. He was so good in it. My God.
Yeah, I guess like he was more time soon. Genuinely, he was like just pulled out of nowhere. Like they asked the schools around that area, like, hey, who's someone who could do this? And he was like pulled from that pool, I think.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the whole cast was amazing. I mean, Divine Joy Randolph definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Best supporting actress, in my opinion.
I assume she'll probably walk home with it.
Really? Everyone I've been talking to has just been assuming. Wait, is Lily Gladstone nominated in supporting or leading?
Best lead. Actress. Like, okay. Lead. Yeah.
Who else is running for supporting?
I honestly don't know.
Here, I'll look it up real quick.
Oh, America Ferrera, right?
Oh God.
All right, calm down, buddy. Hey, I gotta defend the honor of Barbie. Justice for Greta. Do we want to move on to top tens?
Let me plug in some movies real quick. So honorable mentions: How to Blow Up a Pipeline. I thought it was a pretty solid thriller.
I wanted to watch that one.
Yeah, pretty good. Had pretty good music. Very, very tense. Not like particularly like deep or anything, but just a very like entertaining film. And also, I quite enjoyed They Cloned Tyrone, which was this Netflix exclusive like blaxploitation riff with them.
Yeah, I heard that was supposed to be good.
It's quite good. It's actually the directorial debut of Jewel Taylor.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'd like to see more stuff by him. But yeah, really great cast. John Boyega, Tana Paris, Jamie Foxx, Keith Sutherland. And I love blaxploitation. I thought this, like, overall, like, did a good job of kind of, like, riffing on that and, like, translating it into the modern day. So I'd highly recommend checking that out.
So it's not as throwbacky as, like, Black Dynamite?
No, it's like, Black Dynamite's more of, like, a parody of blaxploitation. Whereas I would say, like, They Clone Tyrone definitely has, like elements of parody in it, though it feels more like updating it
to genuine homage
day. Yeah, updating it to the modern day, but also like retaining certain like aesthetic elements of that like era.
Yeah. All right, I'll have to check that out.
I realized one more honorable mention I had was Inside, the new Willem Dafoe movie from kind of earlier in the year. It wasn't like a fantastic movie or anything, but it was like the director's, I think, first narrative feature and maybe only like second film or something like that. And you get like Willem Dafoe to star in it. It's like a kind of low to medium budget thriller with some interesting ideas that like doesn't land necessarily. But for like your second film ever, like that's kind of a dream position to, you know, be starting in. So I would be interested to see where that goes. I wouldn't necessarily like recommend the film super heavily, but like if you're just wanting to like look at this guy, see where his directing chops are, see again just where Dafoe's performing chops are, you know, you could certainly look to this as an example.
Yeah. I was meaning to say that, but I never got around to it, and I literally forgot it existed until you just brought it up, so thanks.
yeah, I kind of did too.
All right, some obvious other honorable mentions that I also feel like we should just get out of the way now. Past Lives, May, December, Anatomy of a Fall all fell within my 4-star range and were good, but just didn't make the top 10 cut.
May, December,
what the fuck is in your top 10 then? Like I feel like we'll get to talking about those, because I feel like May, December and Anatomy of a Fall are going to have to be in my top 10.
Listen, I'm a man with eclectic tastes or something.
Dude, that's true. If anything, you are eclectic.
Yes. All right. Are we ready to go, boys? So,
Nick, you go first.
For number 10, I'm going to throw it down. David Finch's The Killer. I really like this movie. I thought it was a good, like, it's sort of like a meta commentary on his career, is the angle I kind of read into it, which is it's interesting. And I don't know, it was just good to have him back, because I really didn't like Mank.
Mank? You mean Wank?
Yeah, more like Wank.
Honestly, The Killer, I didn't mention it in my disappointments, because I thought that someone would bring it up in the top 10. But yeah, I didn't dislike the film. There's some.
I could see wanting more out of this.
But yeah, I definitely wanted a little more. I don't know, I guess it didn't do much for me overall, but I did really like the how he like used like Amazon to like buy a key fob to then like unlock something for an assassination. That was pretty cool. And I like how like the first assassination takes place inside like the ruins of like an old WeWork, which I thought was pretty funny. I like the kind of like general atmosphere and like some of the vibes this film gives off. It feels a little like weird, a little postmodern, but yeah, I guess I would have liked to see a little more.
Fair enough. I think I was, like I said, just glad to have Fincher back and like, you know, those nice vibes that you get from his films that you can't really get anywhere else. And I thought, you know, Michael Fassbender's character was also just like interesting as a guy, just hearing all of that like internal monologuing.
Yeah, I thought his internal monologue was hilarious throughout the whole movie. It was so funny.
Completely contradictory. It's amazing.
Yeah, when he just like uses the word normies. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
But always gotta love.
That's my number 10.
Incel representation.
Fuck yeah. No, I'm kidding.
All right, I guess I'll go. So my number 10 is Paul Schrader's Master Gardener.
Mm.
That was actually one of my biggest disappointments of the past year.
Yes, I guess I knew that you were going to mention that. I wouldn't say this film was a disappointment for me personally. It did take me like some time to like kind of come around to it, though, I will admit. Like when I walked out of the theater, I was first kind of like, I'm not really sure if that worked for me, but I don't know, it kind of like grew on me as like the days went by, and I ended up like really liking this film. I definitely think it's his weakest in his recent trilogy of First Reformed and The Card Counter, but I like how it does something a little different than those films. Both those films like end in a kind of like type of like orgy of violence, which is typical for the Schrader formula. But the rejection of that in this film, I felt, was kind of interesting. And I also kind of respect how Schrader doesn't really give a fuck, and he just wants to like annoy and piss off as many people as possible. So
yeah,
this was truly the return of the Jedi of the Man in the Room trilogy.
It felt like a troll to me, and I can respect that, but that doesn't mean I have to like it as a troll. Like I can respect that it's a troll movie, but that doesn't mean I have to enjoy sitting there being trolled.
Yeah, no, I understand that, but I personally thought that it was just like top tier trolling to have like a neo-Nazi and like an 18-year-old black girl like get together. Like that was just
insanity.
Funny. Yeah, he's truly like one of the most deranged people to have ever.
He's truly one of the men.
He is. Yeah. One of the boys.
All right. Rhett, do you have a 10 or not yet?
I have my 10 is, I'm going to do the biggest fucking cop out and say that my 10 is a tie between Barbie and Oppenheimer.
Boo. No, that's, you know what? It was an experience put together. So like separating those movies is kind of hard in my brain.
Yeah, it's that. And I think Barbie is, for me, was very immediately appreciable as it was, whereas like I had one viewing where I really didn't like Oppenheimer and then one where I really did, so it kind of evens out to like a, yeah, I guess I like kind of like this film. So yeah, that's where I'm kind of at with both of them. They both have their strengths, they both have their weaknesses, and overall they're kind of middling movies that don't really deserve any like big awards or praise, and the box office that they've got is more than enough of a reward for their quality. So I would hope, or at least would like to see, as few people complaining about these movies as possible post Oscars, but I imagine that's not going to be the case.
I disagree partially. I thought that Barbie was like all right, but I did really like Oppenheimer. That's like definitely higher on my list. I think it's like one of the finer Christopher Nolan films, definitely his best film in the last 10 years, which I feel like this last decade or so is full of mostly flops. But Barbie personally didn't do that much for me, but I thought it was just like a fun experience in the theater.
What I will say about the two of these is that at least they kind of mark a higher caliber of blockbuster that can be achieved in a year when we had so many mediocre blockbusters. Because both of them were pretty standout for the blockbusters that were released this year.
Yeah, I think in that context of...
I'd say Barbie is like pretty impressive based on the $100 million budget. Doing something that sort of did like Marvel numbers on a budget like that when budgets have been skyrocketing to like, you know, $250 million at least for a big movie. It's impressive that it it was able to do what it did.
Yeah, and like my critique, or at least some of my knee-jerk critiques of Barbie, tend to be from the position of like someone, you know, who's been educated and been around like feminism and feminist dialogue for a while, and it just kind of seeming shallow in that regard, like feeling a little bit like feminism 101. But a lot of people need to hear that, and that's like still layers and layers more deeper than what Marvel is offering to people. So kind of in that regard, yeah, the budget, it having those numbers, it just having kind of the hype it did, like it's certainly an achievement, and I won't underplay, you know, what that means for cinema in the year of our Lord 2023.
I will underplay it, because yeah. I don't really care about this movie, but it was fine.
Yep. I mean, I'd say same goes for Oppenheimer, too, being like, I think, I want to say $80 million budget, or, I mean, it might have been like $160 with like marketing, but still, for like, you know, it's been said to death, but like a 3-hour, like, black and white, pretty much all talking blockbuster in quotations, when it's really people in a room talking for like the most of it. It's impressive that they got as many little Zoomer teens as they did to sit down and actually watch that movie, because like, you know, college kids were going to see that.
Now, yeah. If just those Zoomer teens could graduate from the cult of Nolan to the cult of like a more talented filmmaker.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're graduating to Villeneuve slowly.
Yeah, okay. I can see Villeneuve as the next step.
Are you kidding me? Jesus Christ. You guys are crazy.
What now?
He's not the next Nolan. Compared to Nolan.
You're crazy. Get out of here.
You're on track.
No, I'm kidding. No, I like Villeneuve, but yeah, I mean, he's not as good as Nolan, I don't think.
Damn.
Hard disagree, but that's a different conversation.
His movies are vapid and empty.
No!
Yep, I saw it coming.
No!
I just put that in there for Rhett. But anyway. All right.
Thanks, all right. Daddy.
Number nine. Godzilla minus one. That's my number nine. It's, you know, it was pretty peak Godzilla for Godzilla solo. No other monster in the movie. I like it when there's other monster in the movie, but you know what? For solo Godzilla, only Godzilla movie, pretty good. Pretty good. Especially like for the budget and what they were able to accomplish with those visual effects.
Yeah. I feel like minus one is like what movies look like to normal people, and I very much like appreciate it for that. Like, it has its flaws, it has kind of very sort of, it has a thoroughly like realized story in that like all the different sort of emotional beats play through the whole thing, even if it's not an overall like very deep or like complex message. It's just kind of that generic Spielbergian like affirmation of life and community, which is valid. And it's also got a fun big lizard in it and a really impactful nuking scene of Tokyo. There's a lot of stuff to get into there, and I think its flaws honestly make it kind of more appealing there. I actually have it higher on my list, so.
Fair enough.
I have not seen it, but it sounds good from what you guys
said. We didn't have to. We decided to watch all of the Godzilla movies, so this was our big cap. So it was we had to go see it, but it was great. I brought my little Godzilla plushie. I was so excited.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
It's like how I brought my Ray plushie to the no, it wasn't End of Eva. It was
3.0 plus 1.0 plus 2.0 plus 1.0
exactly.
8.0. Yeah.
God forbid they just call it 4.0.
Or sorry, I didn't bring the Ray plushie. The Ray plushie brought me.
I see.
My number nine is the final William Friedkin film. Rest in peace, The King. You would have hated The Exorcist Believer.
Yeah.
It is The Caine Mutiny Court Martial. Very, very solid courtroom drama. I haven't seen many courtroom dramas that basically only take place within the courtroom. The only one that I can really think of is like 12 Angry Men, but even that's like not really the courtroom, it's the like the jury,
the verdict room.
But yeah, this one was quite solid. It was very, very tense throughout. Some really incredible performances, especially by Kiefer Sutherland and Lance Reddick, Jason Clarke. Yeah, really, really great stuff there.
That's a banger cast. I'm surprised I didn't hear about this.
Well, it's because
it was like a it was like a Showtime release or something,
yeah,
wasn't it?
It got dumped on streaming, which is like really disappointing. Actually, like I think like Guillermo del Toro like tweeted about how like this should have like really gotten like a theater release, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's unfortunate that like all of the like interesting like mid budget films just like get dumped on streaming now. Like you can't like see them in theaters, but you know, at least it got made. And fun fact. The cinematographer, Michael Grady, which, by the way, great cinematography, very well shot. Cinematographer Michael Grady is a professor at my university.
Very oh, yeah. cool.
Yeah. He also shot William Friedkin's Bug.
Oh, interesting. I saw that recently with you.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
Brett, what is your number nine?
My number nine is a symptom. I mean, I liked it, but the fact that it's in my top 10 is more just a symptom of, like, how much I didn't really have other movies that I particularly cared about this year. So it's the Kaguya-sama Love is War movie. It's an anime movie that is like a sequel slash continuation because they're going to go back to the TV show. There are three seasons of the TV show. This is what happens after season three. The TV show, I think, has some of the best like rom-com writing I've ever seen. And it's really interesting how they develop that, and they can develop sort of dramatic plot lines, but still through really tight and just genuinely funny comedy. The movie kind of takes it in a little bit more of a serious direction, and I can't like really recommend it to people who like aren't already watching the show, but it has everything that is still to be liked about the show in it. So, you know, I personally enjoyed it because of that, and yeah, it gets the number nine spot because
Weeb.
Of that. Yeah.
Sorry, I
already talked about the Ray plushie taking me to the theaters, dude. It's a foregone.
Yeah, but
conclusion.
Yeah, but now you're explaining the Demon Train movie or whatever the hell you're talking about.
Oh no, god, that movie fucking sucked. Never watched the Demon Train movie.
Well, what's a Demon Train?
What the hell is an aluminum falcon?
I follow someone who I think is one of your friends, Duran, even though I've never met them personally, but they liked the Demon Train movie. Whatever. That's a side point. Don't watch the Demon Train movie. It's not good.
Sounds good. I'll take your advice.
All right, boys, are we ready for number eight?
Let me hear it, Nick.
This is where my shill hat comes on. Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Dude, after Quantumania, I was like, these are never going to ever be good again. And then we got a solid one. I was like, oh hell yeah. No, in. it honestly did feel like a oh we are so back kind of moment, but like it won't last forever. But I really enjoyed this one. Like I think it landed a lot of the emotional arcs. I like where it kind of ended up, and it was a good like send off for James Gunn in doing Marvel, and now he's just like taking over the other company and just like you've lost your best guy after he made like a banger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as a big fan of the Suicide Squad, I had to enjoy kind of what he was now able to do in the Marvel framework because that was successful, and I think that was done really well through this first sort of two-thirds of that movie. I think where it got to some of the sentiment at the end was like where it started to kind of lose me, because I was like, it's losing that kind of tongue-in-cheek value and getting a little bit too much into like, oh, this is my movie and I'm saying goodbye to it. And I was just like, I don't know. It could have been said, I think, more impactfully and with more brevity.
I felt like there was an underlying message of like, this was a movie about James Gunn as Rocket. It was almost like Disney was the villain in The High Evolutionary, and like James Gunn was this thing that was like a little indie filmmaker that was experimented on and is now augmented and better, quote unquote. But it's still just like, what are these movies? Because he felt the corporate politics rip something he was passionate about away from him. So I don't know. I felt like there was like a weird little like parallel in the story that I really enjoyed. About Guardians 3.
Logistically, I liked the parallels. It's just that when you get to the scene of a raccoon talking over a CGI background to his dead otter girlfriend about whether or not he's gonna go into the light, that just kind of lost me there.
Sure, sure.
This is coming from the guy that has an anime film in his top 10.
Yeah.
Ain't no way. All right.
That one Duran. Has a soul.
Duran, number 8.
Number 8. We've already mentioned it, but The Holdovers.
The Holdovers? I love The Holdovers.
I really like this movie. It has an incredible ensemble cast. I love how it was shot on film. It looks very, very good. Maybe a little too nostalgic for my taste, but nevertheless, I think it worked really well for this film. And honestly, it feels like an instant Christmas classic.
I have to agree. I'm probably going to revisit this next Christmas.
Yeah, really, really solid film overall, and I would definitely recommend.
All right, Rhett.
Well, we've mentioned this one before, but number 8, Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves.
We did it, Reddit.
It was a really fun movie. I really liked it. The effects were all super good. I think the characters, while not like super deep, were all just very likable and did their roles pretty well. They had intellect devourers in it, and I love those little fucking walking brains. They're adorable. The person I watched it with did not see the same, so I'm no longer speaking with them.
Damn.
No, I wasn't because of that. It was, yeah.
Spill the tea. Why?
This is definitely what this podcast is about.
I liked tiny Bradley Cooper.
Yeah. That was pretty epic.
I totally forgot about that. Yeah, that was pretty epic.
Unironically, Bradley Cooper's best performance of the year.
Mm-hmm. I was about to say, honestly. His best performance of this year. No other like major Bradley Cooper films came out last year, right? I can't think of any.
I don't know. Okay.
Certainly none that would end up in my top 10 list.
Yeah, or anyone that would get nominated by the Oscars for Best Picture.
Yeah, fun movie.
Hell yeah. Number 7, Nick?
All right, boys. Number 7, Keanu Reeves fall down the stairs for 3 hours. 3 hour action fall down stairs. John Wick, chapter 3, John Wick falls down some stairs of the movie. Oh no, this is chapter 4. I forgot that this was chapter 4. This felt very, very much like a 3. It honestly feels like the first one didn't happen in comparison to, like, how big everything kept getting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the first one in theaters, and I saw 2 in theaters, so it felt very, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I know, I had the same sort of experience.
But anyway, it was just, like, they did it again. They just made 3 hours of, like, the best action you've ever seen, and, like, I can't complain about that. Because it was genuinely so entertaining for 3 hours that just flew by so quickly.
I saw it twice, and I, like, honestly liked it more the second time. I was a little bit more like, well, it's not quite what I really loved about John Wick 3. But then, like, when I went back and, like, knowing that that wasn't the case, I'm like, oh, this is just really good on its own.
Yeah, I liked it, too. I also saw it twice in theaters. I definitely liked it more than 3. I thought 3 was kind of a little too like gimmick / like set piece heavy, but I thought this one was great. Just like dudes shooting guns. What's better than that, huh?
Well, the gimmick and set pieciness of it was what I liked, because I felt like each fight was memorable and brought something new to the table because of that. When your entire movie is just kind of a highlights reel of like, we can do really good action, like I kind of liked that. But I did like that 4 felt a little bit more cohesive in that it could also not rely on gimmicks and just do the action well, even though there were still plenty of gimmicks involved in like what they were doing.
Yeah, I really liked it. I had a great time with it. I mean, yeah, him falling down the stairs leading up to that one area in Paris that I forget the name of embarrassingly was very, very funny.
The only thing I thought was like kind of disappointing was honestly the final duel. Like everything there just felt very predictable, and it wasn't like films or like nothing was really impressive about that compared to everything else that's just so constantly trying to impress you. Like a
spoiler alert, really... I was surprised he died, because I thought I read somewhere they were supposed to make another one.
He's not dead.
I don't know. All of the post interviews were like, nope, this is the final one, but I don't know. You know, that was probably a lie. It seemed like a lie.
We shall see.
More than likely is, just because this keeps making so much money.
It is. I'm pretty sure they've confirmed another movie that he's going to be in, or at the very least in the spinoffs that they're going to start doing now. I think he's going to like show up in little cameos.
Maybe like a prequel or something. I don't know. But One theory about the John Wick movies is that they're kind of like an elaborate conspiracy to like convince people that Keanu Reeves is a good actor because he's just really good at like shooting guns and not talking. But him doing anything else, I think, is not great. That's why these movies are perfect for him.
All he does is say, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's under the illusion that because everyone like walks out of these movies just being like, oh, Keanu was like, yeah, like I don't know. I haven't seen anyone who seems to be falling for that ruse, if that's the assumption we're operating under.
Dude, I love. Have you guys seen his like training videos for like shooting?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So sick. Oh, my God. So he's so cool.
He's so cool. All
right. All right. I'm going to switch it up. Rhett, what's your number 7?
My number 7 was May December.
May December. May December what?
Good question.
What
December, what I
may
know her.
What May December do?
It was just like kind of like Anatomy of a Fall, just pretty generally well written and well performed. I liked the kind of tone with which it dealt with the material, where it's just this kind of, describing it as morally gray seems a lot more like edgy and like centrist than the movie ends up really being, because I think it's trying to show empathy for these characters while still kind of acknowledging the underlying issues with this whole kind of messed up situation, but still, like, yeah, I don't know, a lot of just pretty typical like juicy irony and like who is exploiting who and who is really ruining the other person's lives, is any of this redeemable at all kind of stuff, just all kind of honed in by these really good performances.
Yeah, I really like this movie. This is actually my number 5 movie. I thought it was just like shot really, really well, and I loved all the performances. I thought that like Natalie Portman especially was great, and just like capturing the true like depravity of like pure actor brain. Mm-hmm. You know, I really like that. And yeah, this was my first Todd Haynes feature. So I'd like to check out other movies by him. But yeah, overall, I thought it was quite solid. I think the only thing like holding it back from being a little bit higher on my list is that I didn't particularly care about the subject matter too much. But that's just more of like a personal taste thing for me. I think that the movie like accomplished everything that it set out to do very well.
Yeah, it's not like the premise had me running, you know, to the theaters to go see this movie. It was just kind of like I hear this is good. Oh yeah, this was good.
Yeah, I mean, I also just like, it's good to get like a real like proper melodrama. Mm-hmm. that's handled like, well, even like with like a subject matter is kind of like, I guess like controversial, or maybe like I don't know, like, I feel like lack of a better word, like tacky as this one. I liked how it was like, it was handled pretty like with like seriousness.
Mm-hmm. And like if it ever like still feels kind of exploitative, that's kind of inherently part of the narrative. It's like you can't really get away from that no matter how kind of hard you try to create like an empathetic portrayal of what these people's lives are, or like to present that as a narrative question to a broader audience.
Yeah, and I like kind of how it brings in like cinema too as a question of exploitation, which I thought was interesting.
All right, absolutely. So now it's all
right, well, Duran's number 7. What
number
you got?
7 is M. Night Shyamalan's Knock at the Cabin.
No way.
Oh, no way. I didn't see this one.
I thought this was such a good fucking movie. So much fun. Really, really tense the entire time. Great, like, ensemble cast overall. Great performances. Definitely the best performance by Dave Bautista that I've ever seen. He like,
that's
really
good.
Killed it in this movie.
Okay.
And yeah, like, I love just the kind of like existential dread that's kind of scattered throughout this whole film. Also just, yeah, shot very, very well. I think that's the case with like pretty much all of Shyamalan's films. But yeah, I think it was a really solid horror thriller. Highly recommend it.
All right. I'm happy to check out Dave working his acting chops.
I just, after The Beach That Makes You Old, I just thought I should stay away from that man.
I
know you're an advocate for The Beach That Makes You Old.
It's so funny. It's one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
It is pretty funny. It is pretty fucking funny.
I adore that.
All right, number 6. I got Priscilla. Mm. I seem to be like the only Priscilla advocate that that like made it to the end of the year.
I forgot that movie existed. I wanted to see it. I really did.
I really liked it. Like, I think Sofia Coppola did a really good job of showing like what it's like to be sucked into like a really famous person's sphere of influence, and like especially as like a woman, how Priscilla just like lost all kind of agency because like just the ego of Elvis was too big to like really actually like let her just be a person. She was an object for him. I don't know. It was really good. I really liked it.
All right, boys, you know what that means. It's time for the Yoko movie.
Oh my God. I mean,
you see,
hey, oh God, don't say that, man. Sam Mendes is going to announce the spinoff after the John movie does numbers.
True, true. You see, I wanted to see Priscilla, but as a really big fan of Baz Luhrmann's Elvis, I couldn't. I'm team Elvis. No, I'm kidding. It looks really interesting. I just didn't get around to seeing it.
All right. Duran, number six.
Number six is A Fire, directed by Christian Petzold, a German filmmaker. This one was kind of like a sleeper hit for me. It's like a kind of a romantic-ish drama comedy thing. Basically like
some kind of like comedy object.
Yeah, a bunch of like German students go to this this cabin owned by like one of their parents, and weird psychosexual stuff kind of happens. The main character is like a total like annoying like piece of shit writer guy, which I thought was really funny. Like, he has like no like redeeming qualities, but I guess like that gave him like some kind of a charm, and he's lusting after a girl who's like very clearly out of his league. But yeah, I thought this was quite solid overall. It felt a little like Romer-esque to me, the films of Eric Romer. Yeah, I just thought it was solid.
Very nice. I'll have to check it out. I don't think I had ever heard of that before this. Rhett, what you got for number six?
I'll say number six is Past Lives. I actually quite enjoyed Past Lives. I wasn't like blown away or anything, but it just felt kind of genuine. I know Duran called it vapid and pointless.
Yes.
I wish I saw what other people saw in Past Lives. That's what I'll say. I liked it, but it wasn't like the like be all end all that everybody was calling it at like the beginning of the year when it released.
Yeah,
I like the idea of the movie. Like, the concept's really cool.
Yeah, I think it certainly wasn't like my understanding of cinema has been changed or anything like that. Like, yeah, the best movie of the year. But I just thought it was really like, I can see some of the vapidness in it, but I felt like that was more in the characters, and then it kind of feels honest because like vapid people exist, and you know, so kind of examining how do they, you know, interact with the situation. And I think the performances were all quite good. Like, I just could feel a lot of the emotion going on from both sides, both that sort of overwhelming sense of regret, but also the sense of like, hey, my life is here right now, and you're kind of invading that space and, you know, navigating that whole situation. I just thought it even where it felt like it was flawed to me, it because the effort of the film felt genuine, I didn't mind where I was like, okay, this isn't quite on point or the most like amazing filmmaking, or maybe I thought the cinematography was pretty like unmotivated. It looked very nice, but it didn't contribute, I think, to a lot of my understanding of the meaning of the film. But you know, I'm not gonna like hold that against it. It just kind of feels like, yeah, good, sweet, genuine movie.
Personally, it didn't really do anything for me. Like I said, I like the idea of it a lot, but yeah, I don't know. I just didn't really connect with anything that happened in the film.
All right, that's it. We end the podcast there. There's no top five. See everybody.
Nick, number five, Nick.
Let me hear it. And this is where we have to fight Duran in a dual team battle, zone of interest.
Oh, really? That's only on number five.
I loved Zone of Interest. I almost loved it enough to give it 5 stars. I thought it was basically what the opposite of what Duran thinks it is, which is a very like down-to-earth, nuanced, as you can be when talking about the literal actual Holocaust and the Nazis' take on all of that. It's like, you can try to be objective, but the objective truth of that is really that that's just an evil fucking thing. Where I think is, and I think that that's where me and Duran disagree, but yeah. I just loved it. I loved how it was, like, very naturalistic, just very, like, this is who these characters are, you're just watching them as they go about their daily lives, not thinking twice, really, about what is actually going on around them. I don't know. I liked it. A lot of other people liked it, but we have a big detractor here, so I feel the need to defend it very hard. Rhett, back me up before Duran takes this movie apart.
Yeah, I really, I'll spoil it here. This is my number one pick. I'm a fan of Jonathan Glazer's style, and I think it works really well here, in conveying a lot of the things that people probably need to hear about the Holocaust and the ways in which empathy is denied to people in these instances, how people are dehumanized, how people can be desensitized to the act of genocide, and, you know, also just a good sort of exploration of, like, what film and sound are capable of in terms of, you know, conveying meaning, where you can be shown one thing that's, you know, maybe not necessarily showing the other thing, but that the sound and how that makes you feel, even though it might not be connected to the literal thing, it's invoking in your mind. It's a critical part of understanding,
like, even
the reality that you are seeing.
I don't know. Even if there was, like, a, I don't know, quote unquote ridiculous bit of dialogue, like, I don't, for instance, like the conversations about, like, how do we maximize killing the most amount of people. Those are genuine conversations that they just had, though. Like, that,
yeah.
That did happen. It did. We did actually get there. Like, there is no denying that, like, at one point, normal people, quote-unquote normal people, were sitting around in a room thinking, how can we kill the most amount of people possible in the most efficient way?
Let the record show that Nick just called Nazis normal people.
I said quote unquote.
Well, I mean, that's also an important part of the message of the film, is, like, dissecting, like, the appearance of normalcy versus what's going on underneath, and then, like, how that propagates complacency. And the fundamental question with all of the characters, you know, both from the, you know, literal Nazi commandant to a fucking baby, of, like, how complicit or, like, actively into this are they? Like, obviously, the dad is very actively involved in this whole process, but, like, you kind of end up wondering, like, okay, are there any sort of misgivings in, you know, maybe his wife or some of his children? You know, and it's like the wife, in some cases, Sandra Hüller, you know, seems honestly more into it than the dad at some points, which is just horribly disgusting, but embodies sort of wherein people can become complacent in these kind of regimes, and what can be presented to them that, you know, to our sensibilities would seem absurd, that, you know, oh, just a nice house can convince you that genocide is okay, when in reality that's kind of what it is. And it's an especially important kind of discussion to be having in this current moment.
Yeah,
like, you don't escape that feeling when watching this movie, and, like, also just the experience of being in the theater for this. Like, I was
sorry to cut you off, but, like, we only have, like, 20 minutes left before I, like, need to wrap this up, so
all right, I'll stop.
Duran, if you would like to take it away,
I hated this film.
Oh my god, Roger Ebert back from the dead.
Yeah, no, I really did not like this movie. I thought that it was trying to have its cake and eat it too. It was trying to do, like, a quote unquote, like, objective take on the Holocaust while simultaneously like having like a critical eye towards it, which I mean obviously it should happen. It's like undeniably the worst genocide probably ever in the history of the world. But I feel like it's like just complete utter failure to accomplish like anything it set out to do. I think the music by itself is kind of interesting. Like I thought like it sounded good and all of that, but it really like contrasts to the images and like very clearly like makes like the audience like feel like a certain way about like what they're looking at. I feel like it kind of like treats the audience like without like any respect. I thought that the ending was very stupid. The fact that like it cuts to like a Holocaust Remembrance Museum, probably like an Auschwitz Museum, it was really, really stupid and completely disrespectful to the audience. There's some things I liked about it. I thought it was shot pretty well in general. I thought the like random sounds of gunshots like during just like the normal course of the film was quite compelling. But yeah, overall, I really thought that this was, for lack of a better word, vapid.
Well, me and Rhett disagree, so.
Yeah. I guess basically with all of that.
Looks like you've been outvoted. Get out of here. All right.
Get out of here. Need a file license revoked.
Five. Number five. What do we got for number five, Rhett?
Lobotomy of my balls.
Uh-oh. The dog was the best actor.
It was. Very good film. Fantastic performances. Really solid writing. You know, a lot of really good sequences. I don't have a whole lot of reason to, like, very personally love this film, but if you think this is a 5 out of 5 movie, and it's, you know, just one of your favorite pieces of cinema, I can totally understand where you could come from with that.
Yeah, that, again, like I said, it fell into my, like, 4-star, this is good, but not, like, my favorite thing of the year category.
Yeah, I thought it was, like, generally well done, but I would have liked it to be a little bit more, I would like the ending to be, like, left up to a little more interpretation. I felt like it wrapped up pretty conclusively, even though, like,
yeah,
you
don't
know for sure, like, who, if she killed him or not.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, Duran, number five.
Number five is May December, but we've already talked about that.
All right. So let's move on. Number four, I got Across the Spider-Verse. I don't mind that it was a cliffhanger ending. I just, you know, you get into the theater for a Spider-Verse and you're just like, God damn, they did it again. There's really nothing more to say, man. They did it again and I don't know how. Well, by a lot of overworked unpaid labor, but that's besides the point. It looked really good, guys, if any of you are hearing this. I think the hard work paid off, but you shouldn't have been worked that hard.
Yeah.
Lego Spider-Man was good. I thought the scene where they were, like, having that upside-down but not upside-down conversation, that was giving me, like, vertigo, so good job.
Very nice.
Yeah, I thought it was solid overall. It just felt like kind of like a worse version of the previous Spider-Verse film, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I liked the first one better.
And yeah, I thought the cliffhanger was dumb, obviously, but like it's not a huge deal. For me, like I thought the twist of spoilers of like Miles Morales from the other universe being the Prowler was very stupid. And there's already like 18 fucking villains in this film. And I'm assuming the next film, so like we didn't really need another one. So I didn't really care about that. But besides that, I thought it was pretty solid, pretty good time.
I just think also like the messaging of it overall is it kind of goes back to some like...
Yeah, the messaging is perhaps not as strong as the first one because it's very much just like keep doing your own thing.
Keep doing your own thing, be Spider-Man, save people, even when the world tells you not to save people, yada, yada, yada. Like the first one had a stronger message of like... Spider-Man can look or be like anything as long as it does kind of have that core value of like, you know, seeing the goodness in other people. And here it's just kind of like Spider-Man is good.
That's fair enough. I enjoyed the journey I went on once more. So
it certainly was a journey. I will give it every respect in that regard.
And here it lies at number four. Where What movie lies on your number four? Dret. Who's Dret? Let's find out. Which one of you is going to answer first?
Oppenheimer.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, I really liked Oppenheimer. I thought, like I said before, I think this is one of Christopher Nolan's best films. I thought that the character of Oppenheimer was really interesting. He's a really interesting guy to explore. Like, he never really like knew where he stood on any of these issues. His motivation was always kind of like unclear in a very like compelling way. It was shot very well. I loved the editing. The nuke scene was absolutely incredible. I think just overall, this is like one of the best theater experiences in my life. Not like one of my favorite films of all time or anything, but seeing this in like an IMAX 70mm, like fucking 2 inches from the screen, because I bought my ticket a week in advance and not a month in advance.
Amen.
Just amazing. Yeah, I really, yeah, really enjoyed this film.
That shotgun to the face experience was pretty good. I will say, on a second viewing, I think his motivations become a lot clearer. Yeah, you can go back, refer back to our Barbenheimer podcast for more on that. All right, so for my number four, Venture Bros, Radiant is the Blood of the Baboon Heart. You know what? I think I'm going to just let Nick talk about this because I feel like he's going to have more to say.
Yeah, it's my number one. I just love this. Like, it was just, we watched all of the Venture Brothers and then we went on to watch this, and it was just like this sweet thing was being taken away from me, because this is like honestly some of the best serialized storytelling I've ever seen in like anything, is just all of the Venture Brothers. I love this movie. I can't recommend it enough for like just like nerds. Like, if you're a nerd, you'll like this in one capacity or another, but this is just, this is the movie, man. It's my number one, so.
It hits a lot of the beats you really wanted to. I don't feel as personally connected to Venture Bros, I think, as Nick or Max does. I very much enjoyed the experience of watching it, but like it's more just like I don't know, I don't get to that point of like I'm a super fan for it, but everything about what makes Venture Bros special is certainly in this movie and done very well.
Yeah, I just can't say I love it or recommend it enough. So, four. Who do we still got? Or is that?
That's everyone. Number
that's
three.
Everybody. Three. For me, three. Iron Claw. I feel like Iron Claw is gonna be like our generation of Uncle's Rocky. It's like I came out of that theater and I was just like, this is the new sports movie classic right here. Like, this is when this generation of people is like in their 40s and talking to their brother's kid, they're going to be like, you haven't seen the Iron Claw? And it'll be like some big travesty that they haven't seen this movie yet. I loved it, man. I was so, so emotional during that whole third act. Like, it was just, I was crying in the theater, man. I was into it.
Yeah, I thought it was all right.
Yeah, no, I know everybody else kind of just thought it was all right, but like, I don't know. I thought Zac Efron deserved a shot at Best Actor.
You have your perspective, and you got to be true to that. I didn't see it, so I can't say anything. But yeah, like, if you have that perspective, you are morally obligated to vocalize it.
Yes,
I would definitely agree. The performances are really good, especially Jeremy Allen White and Zac Efron.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of shots that really stuck out to me, but overall, it personally just felt kind of like a run-of-the-mill Oscar drama, more or less, that relies a little bit too much on like misery porn for me to really like care about it.
Ooh,
but
ooh.
Like, I don't want to like undermine the actual like life story of the Von Erich brothers. I just felt like as a film,
you were just being inundated with like sad story.
Yeah, and like not in a way that was particularly compelling for me personally. But I definitely don't think it's a bad film at all. Like, it was certainly well done.
All right, number three, Duran, go ahead.
Number three, Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
I am the sole Martin Scorsese defender in the entire world. I'm the only person who appreciates his films, at least in the screenshot.
I just, like, I'll just say that I thought it was, like, really long, and I felt like I got the point, like, 30 minutes in. That's where I'll leave it. You can go ahead and
I thought
talk
that
about
this
how
was
much you love it.
this was like the real banality of evil movie compared to fucking Zone of Interest. Like,
you see, I feel like Zone of Interest is the real banality of evil movie compared to.
I thought that Robert De Niro's performance in this was like one of the best of his whole career. Like, he was so like creepy and subtle and just like perfect throughout this whole thing. I definitely don't think this is like one of Scorsese's best films, but overall, certainly one of the best films of this year. I liked kind of how relatively understated it is, and I liked kind of how just like the murders, like there's like so many murders, and they feel so like, I don't know, like barren of emotion, I guess. I thought that it was like really effective, and there's some pretty like funny moments in the movie too. But yeah, I really thought that this was quite a great film. I think that Scorsese's late career, his focus on like de-emphasizing spectacle has been really interesting.
Yeah, I feel like that resonated more with me in The Irishman, and I still wasn't a huge fan of The Irishman, but like I felt that more there, and I feel like I can acknowledge that this is, it's there with Killers of the Flower Moon, but just that like kind of between the nearly 4-hour runtime, you know, and just perhaps more ethereal factors, I just wasn't feeling it.
Yeah. Yes, me, it should have been longer.
Rhett, what is your number 3?
Godzilla Minus One.
Right.
Very fun movie.
Move on to number 2. Poor Things. I love Poor Things. You either love or you hate Poor Things, and I love Poor Things.
That's not true. I think it was mediocre.
That's true. yeah, I don't know, man. I was taken on a journey by Mr. Yorgos Lanthimos, and I was captivated by what I saw on screen. I thought it was like Wes Anderson if Wes Anderson was, like, still good. It was, well, like, the aesthetics at the very least. It's like...
Well, but that was the thing for me, is that I did really like the BioShock Unreal Engine weird core aesthetics that they were going for, except that I felt like that contributed nothing to this like central narrative / meaning of the film, but it wasn't so bold as to like eschew meaning or just go into complete absurdity. It was still a very overtly like political movie, and I think like any way I interpreted like the political leanings of that movie or the like ideological meanings of that movie, it just didn't lead me anywhere that I thought was like good.
Damn.
I thought it was like fine. I liked the production design and the performances were good, especially Mark Ruffalo, who had me like kind of rolling the entire movie.
Yeah, no, I really funny, like in kind of a subtle way, not always subtle, but sometimes. I was really struck by the idea of the film and like what kind of what the twist ends up being, and like I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, but the kind of like how they kind of approach the Bride of Frankenstein, Pinocchio aspect of the story. Is very I don't know, it really appealed to me, so, and I like the way that it tackles the things that it's talking about. I know you really didn't, but I don't know, it's that thing where it's like, even if you feel like this is maybe basic feminism, it might be good to remind people like what that really means, like Barbie did.
I didn't feel like it was basic feminism, though. I felt like it was like Reddit feminism.
The thing is also like Barbie is like a blockbuster, and this is more of like a like mid-budget indie movie. So I don't know if that argument holds personally.
Yeah, sure. There isn't like the cult of Yorgos that there is the cult of Greta. So
yeah, I don't know. I really like this movie though.
Really respected Emma Stone's performance. Like, if it wasn't for her, this whole movie would have like completely fallen apart. So a lot of respect for her. I wasn't quite seeing the Ruffalo hype. I liked when Willem Dafoe would burp some bubbles. That had me rolling.
Absolutely. All right. Rhett, number 2.
Number 2, that is John Wick Chapter 4. I just like experiences that I will like remember and enjoy from going to watch a movie, like that was just more so than basically any other. Like, maybe like Minus One could potentially dethrone it there, just because that felt kind of special in that, you know, that was sort of the capstone to our whole Godzilla run. But I think on its own, like, yeah, that was just a thoroughly enjoyable action adventure movie, very impressive. And like, none of the movies that were lower than this really reached a level of like deeper meaning that I felt like outweighed just my inherent enjoyment of this movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. Duran, number two.
Number two is Full River Red by Zhang Yimou. I think that this is a really, really fun Chinese blockbuster. It's like a mystery thriller, kind of like comedy set in medieval China. It's kind of like a conspiracy thriller-esque type thing with very Chinese nationalistic sentiment. So if you want the CCP to take over the world, watch this film. Great movie.
Oh, yeah.
Getting the real Rex from Duran. This is why I come on this podcast.
That's what I'm talking about. All right. Yeah, I said my number,
number one.
I said my number one.
Radiant is the Blood. Duran, did you say your number one?
I did not. Number one is Victor Uriza's Close Your Eyes. The Spanish Master returns after 30 years. And his latest feature film about a director who's following one of his good friends, an actor who disappeared 20 years ago, and he finds new information about him maybe being out there somewhere. I think that this film is a great reflection on what cinema means, what it's doing in the 21st century. It's a really great old man's film, and I think that it has one of the best endings of recent memory. I think that this is like the only true like masterpiece I saw from this year. Embarrassingly, I have not actually seen any of the other Victor Uriza films, but I'll definitely be checking them out soon. I really love this film.
Well, boys, I think we did it.
All right. That sounds
That's 2023 in a nutshell.
Yeah. All right. That's a good year of cinema if I ever saw one, eh?
Three to four.
It was all right.
It was all right. I'd say besides Close Your Eyes, yeah.
Damn. Amazing. One good movie this year.
Yeah. One great movie. One great movie.
All right, guys. It's been good.
Good night.
Adios.
Man. Movies.
No, right? Now more than ever. What do you think about the new Alien show?
I'm excited. I mean, Noah Hawley makes good TV, so... me and Rhett finally finished Legion together. That was good.
It's directed by the guy who did the Evil Dead remake.
That's the movie.
Wait, what?
Yeah, so there's a movie and a TV show coming. The movie's supposed to be this year. The TV show is supposed to be, like, kind of beginning next year.
Oh, okay. I see. It's like a feature film? Like, in theaters? Or like a TV film?
Yeah, no, it's they were originally going to release it on Hulu, but then they were like, you know what? We should, like, treat these properly. And they decided they were going to release it in theaters.
Mm.
So that's nice. Cool. I love being threatened with not being able to see a movie in theaters.
Yeah.
You're going to watch it at home and you're going to enjoy it.
Dude, I'm so happy. The new Woody Allen film finally got a U.S. distributor.
All right, we're back.